Thank you, Dimitri. First of all, I want to thank the organizers for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here for one week. It's a great place to do mathematics and to escape from other less exciting duties. I'm also very pleased to talk today because today is in fact the 200th birthday of Évariste Galois, one of the founding fathers of group theory and symmetry. I will talk about groups and symmetries applied to virus architecture. This is a kind of preliminary report on joint work with Alice Devillers from the University of Western Australia and Ryden Twarock from the University of York in the United Kingdom. It's quite recent collaboration, so we started only this summer. There are no deep or new results, but just another way of explaining things and seeing groups acting there. First, biology 101. What is a virus? Well, it's in fact a small box made out of proteins, and inside the box there is a genetic material. This is DNA. If such a virus gets into a cell, it can use all features available inside that cell to replicate itself. It uses its DNA, comes out of the box, and then is used to make copies of the virus. Well, in 1956, Crick and Watson, the guys who discovered the helix structure of DNA, they noticed that inside the virus there is such a small amount of DNA that it cannot be a program or a way to construct very intricate and very difficult proteins. What they say is that the only reasonable way to build a protein shell, so the box of the virus, is to use the same type of molecule over and over again. Then they say that subunits would be packed so as to provide each with an identical environment. This is possible only if they are packed in a symmetric way. They predicted a cubic symmetry. Later people discovered that icosahedral symmetry is preferred for viruses. Most viruses live in a box like this or are a box like that one. Also later, even later, was discovered that this symmetry was not always exactly. Well, the idea of the identical subunits that they had was not completely correct. People have discovered other kinds of viruses with other features like antennas or other kinds of proteins around the vertices of the icosahedron. The subunits are now of a few different types. Usually there are three, four different types, but not more. They are in what they call quasi-equivalent environments, so they are not exactly equivalent. Good. Then in 1962, Kasper and Klug developed a new theory to describe these new kinds of viruses. Well, the idea is that you use triangulations of the faces of the icosahedron. You subdivide each face into smaller triangles in that theory, and you put in the corners of the triangles, you put what they call capsomeres. These are the small proteins making or building the box. You have some examples here. You triangulate like this, then you get lots of small proteins together on a face like this. This theory is based on, say, if you look in the plane on the tiling of the plane by triangles, so I superimposed it here in blue. Of course, you can give coordinates to all vertices of that tiling using an appropriate base here, and they call it the K and H vectors. The idea is that you. This is an unfolding of the icosahedron. You will embed this somewhere on this tiling. What you do is you choose one. This is one face of the icosahedron. you choose one vertex to be the origin, and the other vertex, you choose it somewhere on the in the tiling with triangles. And then you construct the triangle based on that. So for example, if you start with the vertex with coordinates hk equal to 1, 1, and you build a triangle on this, you get 6 half triangles of the tiling on the face of the icosahedron. Maybe on the next picture it's better. Then you put in the corner of each of these triangles, these little triangles, you put a capsomer, and then you get a distribution of the icosahedron like that. So the red little dots give you the different proteins on the icosahedron. If you take, for example, KH equal to 2, 0, so the second vertex of the face of the icosahedron is located at 2, 0, then you get another way of putting the proteins on the faces of the icosahedron. Now, Casper and Klug use the T number to describe these structures, and the T number is just the distance between two icosahedron vertices. So it's just this distance squared, and due to the 60 degree angles, this is exactly equal to h squared plus hk plus k squared. Now, Casper and Klug want to do everything with this T number, so they have some problem to distinguish between, for example, hk equal to 1 and 1, 2. They don't see this difference because, of course, the roles of h and k are symmetric in this T number. So they invented a notation saying left T7, left T7, right, to distinguish these. But that's no problem. Of course, you can count the number of proteins that you need to make such a capsid, as it's called, so the box of a virus. People call this a capsid, and you have 60 times this number T proteins making the box, and they are clustered, as we know, 12 clusters of 5, and then 10 times T minus 1 clusters of 6. So this is a nice theory, and it describes many viruses, but of course there are exceptions, and in the 80s people discovered one of the exceptions. So it's an ugly picture, but you should be able to see there are many pentagons here. So there is something wrong. This is not possible in Casper-Klug theory. If you count the number of proteins in the box, you have 420. So Casper-Klug says this should be T equals 7. But you see that there is something wrong here. For example, where you have 6 triangles joining, you have only 5 capsomers or 5 proteins there, and you don't know how to arrange them. So Ryden Twarock in 2004 had the idea of using another tiling, not only use triangles but use more special tiling. You recognize the kites and rhombs tiling, so it's a kind of Penrose tiling, and here you see that this exactly matches the real experimental distribution of capsomeres. So this was a good idea, and even one of the rules in the new theory is that capsomeres only appear in corners with the same angle, so here and here, for example, or here and here. So this new kind of tiling explains also interactions between proteins that were not covered by Casper-Klug theory. So for example, these three proteins in a kite tile, they interact with each other more than with the other neighbors. So this is a new kind of theory, which of course contains Casper-Klug theory. And if you do, the next idea is to superimpose several tilings and then to try to see whether that explains something in biology. And yes, it does. So superpositions of tilings can explain more complex structures, like, for example, cross-linking. Cross-linking is that proteins entangle with each other and try to make more strong structures. And this, so some viruses have what they call cross-linking, and so they are more stable. And this can be done by superimposing. I don't know if the picture is clear, but you put a new tiling on top of the old tiling, and then you can see what happens. Now, another thing you could study is, let's say, the mechanics or the dynamical properties of a capsid. In fact, this box at some point should open to release the DNA, so it moves. Also, the faces have a kind of vibration. And using this tiling theory, so this is called viral tiling theory now, you can also compute, from a mechanical point of view, resonant frequencies or eigenmodes of these boxes. And you can use this to have new treatments. So if you hit a virus with a laser that is tuned exactly to the resonant frequency, the box explodes and you destroy the virus, just like the Tacoma bridge here. So this is a new idea of treatment or disinfection by laser light. So it's important to discover the structure of these boxes and of these the location of the proteins so that you can compute all these eigenmodes and frequencies like this. So if you want to do this in a more mathematical way, well, you know that crystallographic groups, they stabilize a lattice, but our hero of today is the Coxeter group of type H3, the group of the icosahedron. This is not crystallographic. So you can look at things that look like lattices, so lattice-like structures or quasi-crystals. So how do you make a lattice for a given Coxeter group? For example, if you take a cell 3C, you can look at the root system. You can make it act on that. And then you see, well, there are two simple roots here, alpha 1, alpha 2, and they give you mirrors for the reflections, and you can generate a group like this. You have here also the highest root that creates a mirror like this, which is not drawn, and you can add a new mirror, which is H alpha H affine, and this is parallel to that one. So if you compose the two reflections here, you get a translation mapping the origin to alpha H there. And if you make this act on the origin, so the group generated by the reflections together with this new reflection, you get a triangular lattice, right? So you move this hexagon like this, and then you make the group act, you go around, and then you make this lattice. So this is nice, because the vertices of the hexagon here are mapped by the translation on the vertices here, so you get a nice regular kind of lattice. Now we could also try to do this with H2, which is a pentagon, let's say. So you take a cyclic group of order 5, and what you can do is also translate it. So I made a pentagon here. You could also translate it like this up to some point and then move it around by the cyclic group. If you take an appropriate translation, well, you cannot map vertices onto other vertices of the pentagon, that's not possible, but the next best thing is to map it on axis of symmetry of the pentagon, and then make this act, and if you look at the orbit of the origin under this group, well, if you take the full group, you get a dense set of points, so that's not so good. But what you can say is we restrict the number of translations that we can use, and then you get a cloud like this, that looks like a quasi-crystal. So this is the idea here, is to restrict the number of translations. So let's write M exponent S, words made with elements from C5 and using this new translation, where T appears at most S times. So then you generate only a finite number of points. Of course, you can do this in three dimensions, so you can do exactly the same, and then you get pictures like this, right? So this is M0 without translation, M1, M2, right? So here we are allowed to use the translation only twice, and this is the pictures you get. And the idea is, does this tell something about viruses? Well, what you see here is that you have several layers of points. So these orbits are on shells. And if you look at viruses nowadays, they can make very nice pictures. You see that the outside of a virus is not flat. It's not. You have some mountains and valleys there. And so, in fact, Twerok and some friends studied such a virus. I don't know the name, it's SV40, I think, but don't ask me which disease it causes. So looking at different layers, you can explain different biological or chemical features of this box from the virus. So these layers are quite important. And what is the next thing you can do? Well, you just take a finite group now, for example, the icosahedral group. This will be our example all the time. And you can look at an orbit of a certain point. So you can look at, for example, the 12 vertices of an icosahedron. And then, so this is, let's say, a starting configuration, like we had the pentagon as a starting configuration, and then we look for interesting translations. So that's the idea, and we will have translations in the direction of an axis of symmetry. So for example, like this, or something like this. So a translation is said to be admissible. That's the idea of being on these axes of symmetry if there are at least two elements in our starting configuration such that their images after translation are on axis of symmetry of the starting configuration. So for a pentagon, you can, this is not such a nice picture, I'm sorry. So you take your pentagon, you put it here, you look at its axis of symmetry. Let's try to draw them like this. Okay, there's one more here. So the idea is that you will move the pentagon along one of these axes until the vertices, wait, I will repair my material. Okay, so you move until you are on axis of symmetry. So for example, this is a possible translation because these two vertices are on axis of symmetry. I can also move here. I could move a bit further, or I can move the other way. So that's the idea, and these are the possible configurations that you get. And using these translations, you can then make these clouds of points. And this is what we did for the icosahedron. So the icosahedron, you can choose the direction in which you translate it. So you get a kind of table. So for example, let's explain this tree here. So you can have the group acting on vertices or on centers of faces or on centers of edges. So this gives you the, let's say, the starting configuration. So if you start with the 12 points as a starting configuration. So let's see what happens if you move it along a fivefold axis, so like this. So if you look, wait, I can see this clearly here on top. If I move like this, I can look at this vertex, which is equivalent to all these, and see when it comes, for example, on this axis of symmetry, of twofold symmetry. So I can move it and see, oh, it's here. Or I could move it the other way and wait until it's on the axis of symmetry of order 3, things like that. So if you look from the top, let's say this is our vertex, we have, let's say, this edge here with its center here, then you have a face here with center here, you have another axis of symmetry here, and then you have this kind of thing. So you see that there are four possible locations, but in fact we only have three in the picture, since moving the icosahedron until this point is here is the same as moving until this point is here and then applying the group of the icosahedron. So we get only three. So you can check this. This is not so difficult. You have in total 41 admissible translations, right? And the affine extension that we had, the affine extension that we had generating these clouds was just one of these, okay? So you get more possible clouds of points by looking at all these things. So what we did, and which is not very difficult but rather tedious, is compute really with coordinates these translations and generate these clouds of points. So these are three examples of clouds that you get. We just have a picture of M1 here, so you're allowed only to translate once, right? One translation, you get these things. There are 41 such configurations. What can you do with this? Well, we have them in a computer, or rather Raiden has them in a computer. And you can look at databases of viruses. So Viper is one of the databases. This is online. You get coordinates for all the kinds of proteins. And then you just choose a virus there. And then you look at the outer layer in our clouds of points. And then you compare the outer layer to the 41 outer layers that we have, right? Well, in fact, also a little theorem that you can prove is that the outer layers, there are only 26 of them. So some of these configurations give you exactly the same points on the outer layer. And then you can look whether you have a match with this outer layer, and then scale the whole model, and then check whether you find some structure that is in the database. So you can do this, and for some viruses, and one example is here, you get a good prediction of the fine structure, so all the holes that you get, you can see from the clouds of points that we have. What you can also do is combine several clouds. So you have a cloud for, say, fivefold axis with the vertex that comes on a twofold axis, something like this. You can combine it with another cloud, and you get two or three clouds inside each other. These also describe viruses. And it is also believed that the material inside the box also has this symmetry. So what we do, in fact, is a kind of group theoretical X-ray analysis of the virus. So you can predict what goes on at several levels, several layers inside the virus. Okay, I'll stop here. Thank you.